Perek Tes Zayin Pasuk Aleph. Vayelech Shimshon Azosa. Shimshon went to Aza, or Gaza, that's what that is today. Vayarshom Isha Zayna, Vayavoyeleha. And he saw there a Zayna. And he came to her. So, again, this is Shimshon with his style of not doing things in a very original and unusual style. So that's why we have to read straight into the next pasuk. La'azosim lemar, to the people of Aza to say, Ba Shimshon hema, Shimshon has come here. Meaning, in other words, Shimshon, basically, some time had gone by since the previous exploits, and Shimshon decided that it's time, the time has come for another assault on the police. So he came to Gaza. This is already a new area. Beforehand he had been in Timna, under the Plishtim, where there were different strongholds of the Plishtim around Eretz Yisrael. Now he came to Gaza, and he came to the home of a Zayna, for the purpose of getting word around that Shimshon is in town. That's la'azosim lema. It's unusual usage in the pasuk. Vayavoyeleha, he came to her, la'azosim lema, the next pasuk, to the people of Gaza to say. In other words, what the Al-Sheikh says was, this woman, this Zayna, was in this town the center of the action. Meaning, we've already seen the concept earlier that actually Zaynas, even though in our society, even in a lousy Western society, it's not considered a respectable trade. At that time, it was actually a prestigious trade. There were the high class Zionists that the who's who used to patronize, like we saw back with Rachav in the time of Yeshua. So this woman was a very central place in town. And what happened in this woman's home got around town very easily.
Couldn't you have gotten the word around just in an easier way?
Maybe not. I don't want to get into the particulars of that right now. Let's see. We'll analyze things one at a time. Whatever it is, he came here in order to get word around that Shimshon is back in town. Okay. Now I'll just note that the truth is it's not so clear exactly was this woman a Zayna in the true sense of the word, in a harlot. The Targum says that the word Zayna is not from the term Znus, it's from the term Zaynus, as in an innkeeper. It was simply an inn. But whatever it is, it doesn't really make a difference, because we know that he was involved with Plishti women, and whether it's actually what was going on here or not doesn't really have much bearing on our story. Point is, he came here in order to get the word around that Shimshon is back in town. So now, but we will go with the understanding that yes, she was a simple Zayna, and we'll explain the significance of that as we go along. By a Zaybu, so they heard that Shimshon is in town. Now he wanted to be in a central place, he wanted to lure them in. He wanted them to come try to attack them and then he'll do his thing. But they had already learned their lesson. So they surrounded the area, and they laid ambush for him the entire night, near the gateway of the city, and they laid quietly the entire night. Meaning, they decided it's not good strategy to attack him where he is. Rather, what they decided to do is, they said, we'll lay an ambush. They locked the city gates. They wanted to trap him in. We'll lay an ambush till the morning. And we won't make any noise. Like, we won't let him know that he's in danger or anything. Let him exhaust himself throughout the whole night. We'll have our best chances in the morning when he's finished. He'll be leaving the city. City gates will be locked. And then we'll have a chance to attack him and kill him. So they said, Adonai Boika Varagnu, when the morning comes, we'll kill him. Okay. So what happened? Vayishkav Shimshon ad chatzi halayla. But Shimshon slept, stayed lying until midnight. Vayokom lachatzi halayla. And then he got up at midnight. So here they were already somewhat surprised. They were expecting him to be out of commission until morning. They were lying in ambush, not expecting action yet. But all of a sudden he shows up at midnight, and again, they were waiting to see when their chance will be to attack. And here there was a bit of a surprise. They were waiting for him to start fumbling with the city gates. The city gates were locked. We haven't seen a city gate. They're talking about massive iron doors. Chazal say they were 60 amos long, the city gates. So about massive city gates. So they're watching in ambush. What's going to happen now? All of a sudden at midnight he shows up earlier than scheduled. He approaches the city gates. He doesn't break the lock. No, no. What for? It's a good lock. Rather, he took hold of the city doors, two big iron doors, with the doorposts that they were attached to. He didn't break the bar. He simply lifted the whole business up with the bar. He put it on his shoulders. And he simply moved it out of the way. They were in his way. He moved it out of the way. He carried it to the mountain that overlooks Hebron. Chazal say that it was a day's walk away. He carried the city gates on his shoulders, a day's walk away. He put them down at a mountain a couple of miles away. Okay, so this certainly is another good demonstration of Shimshon's capabilities. But there's more here. Why? What's this business about Chatzos? Here's also, let's remember, we kept stressing, Shimshon is doing very unusual things here. Very unusual things here. But as we stressed back at the beginning, when you first introduced Shimshon, when it says, Vayochal Ruach Hashem Lefa'amoy, and Chazal said that it was like the bells at the Kohen Gadol war when he approached the Kodesh. Shimshon was operating in the Kodesh HaKodashim throughout his whole career. Well, we'll see.
Literally?
But, what's that?
Literally?
Meaning in his mind, he was in the same place as the Kohen Gadol was in the Kodesh HaKodashim. He was operating with that same solidness, even while he was busy fraternizing with the Plishtim. Getting involved with Plishti women. In his mind, his motives, his feelings were, even while on the outside he looked like he was just partying with them, he was in the highest of places. It was like the Kohen Gadol doing the service on Yom Kippur. That was how he felt with all the things he was doing, like the Kohen Gadol offering up Keteris. So listen to this, Rav Moshe David Vali says, Talmud of the Ramchal. Rav Moshe David Vali says, well, I'll put it into our simple terms, he puts it in deeper terms. Why did he get up at Chatzos? Tikkun Chatzos. I'm going to put that into deeper terms. Really, today for us, Tikkun Chatzos is mainly a tefillah over the Churban. There wasn't the Churban at that time. But Chatzos is a time of very, very great spiritual opportunity. The Zohar describes what happens at Chatzos. Zohar describes how at Chatzos is a time. That's why we consider Chatzos a very auspicious time, midnight. That's why we do Tikkun Chatzos at Chatzos. But it says that until Chatzos is when the Midas Hadin has control. But at Chatzos, it says Hashem comes to enjoy the company of the Neshamas and the Tzaddikim. It's a very, very special time. And those down here who want to connect with that can be up at Chatzos and can be a part of that. They can connect through their learning, etc. That's why Chatzos is noted as a very auspicious time, a very special time, a very opportune time for spirituality. That's why we learn about David HaMelech. Chatzos Laila Okum Lahodes Lo. Says David HaMelech, even when he went to sleep, never let Chatzos pass him by. And Shimshon was the same thing. Part of his spiritual regimen was Chatzos. And he wasn't going to miss this because right now he needed to be involved with a Plishti woman. So yes, see that? He's in the house of a Plishti woman spending the night, but he's up at Chatzos. He's up at Chatzos in order to be a part of the spiritual goings-on that happened at Chatzos. Okay. Now, We will note, though, that at the end of the day, Shimshon's arrival in Aza is noted by Chazal as where he started to slip, mainly in the next story. But here already, again, if we're going with the understanding that she was a Zaina, literally, he started to slip here. Now let's see how this develops into what's coming. So we move on.
What's the significance that he had to bring the gate to Hebron, to the opposite of Hebron? What's the point of telling us that?
Oh, what's the point of telling us that? So you're raising a good point. Rabbi Moshe David Mali says that he brought it to Hebron further to show Hebron was one of the holiest places of Eretz Yisrael. Remember, we're talking before the era of Yerushalayim. Okay, Hebron was the place, the place of the burial of the Avos, etc. Hebron was known as one of the holiest places in Eretz Yisrael. Here also, as we've already seen earlier, in many of his activities with the Plishtim, he was bringing across the point that he's doing, and therefore, what he was signifying by carrying the doors to Hebron is showing that he's taking the gateway to Tuma, the Plishtim, and he's going to bring that to a much more elevated place. Now he has broken through the forces of Tumah, leaving it wide open, and now he's placing the gateway in Hebron. He's brought it up to a higher place. Okay. Now, Vayehi Achreichen. It was after this, Vayehav Isha Benachal Serek. And he loved a woman in Nachal Serek, Ushma Delilah. Her name was Delilah. Now let's already know that there's something different going on than what's been going on up until now. We've already seen that he had his plans and why he Davka wanted to get involved with Plishti women. On the simple level, it was in order to get entangled with the Plishti. We've already explained earlier, on the deeper level, thought that by marrying Plishti women, he would be able to achieve great things. Meaning, while he's destroying them on the physical level, by marrying Plishti women, he actually wanted to extract whatever what we call sparks of Kedusha are still concealed within the Plishti women and in the Plishti nation, get them out by taking these women, by bearing children from them. Okay, but whatever it is, what's that? It's not recorded. It seems that he did, just from these different sources that talk about this, but no children are recorded.
Where's the plot that he had children?
Not that he had children, but that his purpose was that he wanted to bear children from the Plishtim in order to be able to bring out whatever hidden sparks of Kedusha there are. In all Tumah, there's some source of Kedusha that they're drawing their koyach off. And therefore, this concept, I don't know to explain it exactly, it's a Kabbalistic concept, that you can drain the Tumah of all of its vitality by extracting the Koyach of Kedusha that's there. And also, this potential there that can be brought out in the right way. Shimshon wanted to actually destroy them on both levels. And therefore, he was actually extracting whatever Kedusha they had, bringing it into the realm of Kedusha, taking what was there and making out of it something that would serve as Klal Yisrael, thus draining them of whatever Koyach of Kedusha they had, and destroying them both on the physical and spiritual level. Whatever, that, see above, we already discussed that earlier. But, as we pointed out, Shimshon was getting into dangerous territory. To be able to figure, I can go in and do these things, L'shem Shamayim, that required, like we said before, to be able to approach base activities, right, really with a sense of absolute, completely just focused on the Kedusha, not focused at all on physical pleasure out of this or anything like that. And therefore, earlier when he took that Plishti wife from Timnah, didn't say anything about love. It said she's right in my eyes. Meaning Shimshon was making cold calculated cheshbonos, which is the right woman for my purposes. And here also, even when he came to this Zaina in the beginning in Gaza, it was a manipulation. Right? Shimshon is pulling strings. But here already we see expressed Shimshon loved her. Now here we're already starting to mark the problems that are starting to set in. Now, even this is not so simple. She, again, he had a spiritual campaign here. And he was trying, yes, to extract from the Plishtim, or from, more specifically from Plishti women, whatever there was to be gained by having relationships with them. Right? Now, this could manifest through plain and simple manipulation, like seems to have been the case with his first wife, or it could manifest in another way. He can find that Plishti woman with the potential of really connecting to the Am Hashem. Right? That's what happened in the case of Yeshua and Rachel. Now you have here and there the great people, this Ruth, right? We know that there's a concept of Goyish women who are waiting. There's great potential and great things to contribute to the Jewish people. They just have to be drawn into the Jewish people. Delilah appeared to be such a woman. Delilah appeared to be such a woman. And here Shimshon thought he was dealing with a different story. Here he's not just playing with a Plishti woman in order to achieve his purposes. Here he already saw in her a woman who in his mind was another Rachab, was another Rus. And he thought, what he actually started doing was developing a real relationship with her. But actually, she was going to be the cause of his downfall. This we say is already implied in her name, Shema Delilah. Her name was Delilah. Chazal say Delilah is from the term weakening, ledalel, to weaken. Chazal say dildela koichai, dildela masav, dildela libay. She brought down his strength, she brought down his level of performance, his maisim, and she brought down libay, even his heart.
Why did he have
Avamina
that she was going to be like Ruth?
What's that?
From what he saw in her,
Moshe David Bali says that she actually made a very pious and righteous appearance. He saw in her potential greatness.
She's not even
women.
Isn't she actually
halachically
Jewish to begin with?
It was Megayah.
She didn't show too much faith for him. Like, she just kept trying and again.
Well, so let's see. So the truth is, you're right. Shimshon made a mistake. And this is starting to be the beginning of the end. This is already where the tragic start of the story begins. Now, the truth is that even this was not necessarily in a blatant way. It's not necessarily that she was out there to deceive him. As we'll see soon, on a certain level, she cared for him. We'll see, even though anybody who knows this story thinks she couldn't have cared for him that much. But let's see. Whatever it is, Vayalu Eileo Sarne Plishtim. Vayemru. Now the truth is, well, no. This can mean one of two things. It could mean either that he was completely misled, that she wasn't at all, she was really just leading him on. Or it could mean that, no, she really did have certain pious intent, just it wasn't as deep as he thought, and as she thought, and it wasn't that difficult to get her away. So let's see what happened. Vayalu eleo sarne plishtim. The officers of Plishtim came to her, vayemru lo, and they told her, pati oisoi, try to coax him, uri bameh koichai gadol, and learn the secret of what is it that makes his strength so great. Ubamenucha lo, vaasanuhu laanoisoi. How will we be able to prevail over him? How will we be able to capture him in order to afflict him or to weaken him? As we'll see soon, in this context, la'anoisa really means to weaken him. Vanachnu niten lach, and we'll give you ish elef u'meah kesef. Each of us will give you 1,100 silver talents, for lack of a better word. Silver coins, whatever it is. 1 minute, just a second. So let's just note. The Malbim and the Al-Sheikh both note. Why didn't they tell her? We'll catch him and kill him. No, the point is that they couldn't tell her that she wouldn't have agreed. They had to promise her that they weren't going to kill him in order to get her cooperation. Meaning, she was, she did like him, and she maybe she even had certain ideals, but among those ideals was 1,100 silver coins, times whatever it was. So it was a question of where exactly the 1,100 silver coins was on her priority list. And turned out to be pretty high. whatever it is, even so, she wouldn't have, they would say, we'll come and we'll kill him. They would have agreed. They promised that they wouldn't kill him, and they didn't. They didn't. We'll see that. It's surprising. See, later, even when they captured him, they didn't kill him. They should have, given the circumstances.
Why,
but no.
Why would the first Christian woman, she was threatened that we're going to kill your father, but here she's not saying we're going to kill your dad. They're saying we're going to give you money.
Well, first of all, a couple of reasons. First of all, here, they're asking her to do something that's not necessarily in her hands. They're asking her to discover the secret of his strength. But besides that, earlier they didn't even yet know who he was. Right? It was just an issue of a riddle. They didn't know who he was. He hadn't done anything yet. Here, it could be that they would be scared. They come and threaten her. She just tell him the story and he goes and beats them all up. Right? Okay. So, So Delilah said to Shimshon, "Hagida nali bame koicha chogodo, ubame te osel anoisecho. Please tell me, what makes your strength so great, and what can be done? How could one capture you and weaken you?" So now, let's note, he was making a mistake. He really built a true relationship with her, and, well, let's just say that the dynamics were such that there was room for her to ask this. He still didn't tell her the answer right away. But the relationship was such that he didn't become suspicious. He took it as a true question. She's close with him. She's his wife. She wants to know what it is about him. But he's still not giving her the answer. So Shimshon tells her, "I'll tell you the secret. If you take 7 ropes, fresh ropes, that were never dried out, I'll be weakened, then I'll be like one of the people." Okay. Well, let's see. First, he's playing games with her. We'll see. So, Vayalu lo sane plishtim shiva yisarim lachim. So again, they provided all the equipment. The officers of the plishtim provided her with 7 of these fresh ropes, that were never dried out. Vatasfeyu bahem, and she tied him up in them. Now again, she was doing this in a way that was coming in the context of a relationship. She was doing it in a way that he wouldn't even have room to be suspicious. In fact, you'll see later, the Mefarshim infer that she did this while he was up. I mean, he just said, "Yeah, let me try." And he, you kind of put his hands together, go ahead, watch.
But you think he was suspicious because he lied to her.
Right. Lied to her. I guess, to that extent, to actually mamish go ahead and give away the secret of his strength, that was something he was still hesitating to do. So now, she tied him in them, okay. Now the force, the ambush force of the plishtim was waiting in the side room. And she said to him, "The plishtim are upon you, Shimshon. The plishtim are about to get you." And he instinctively just snapped the ropes. The same way a wick of lint would just fall apart when it gets even close to fire, meaning it just melted. But I know that koicha, you didn't even see strength there. It wasn't like he went and he broke it apart. He was tied and it simply melted off his hands. Again, as we stressed, Shimshon's strength, everything about Shimshon, was completely divine. It wasn't even necessarily like there was his strength there. What simply happened was it fell off. That's all that happened. There was no display of strength here. Okay. Now, he's still not suspicious because, as far as he was concerned, she was playing games. No, see, that's the point. When they saw that happen, they stayed in their hiding place. They stayed in ambush. They didn't come out. He never knew they were there. That's what the Parshim say. He never knew they were there. That's why he told him the secret next time. Otherwise, he should have killed her and them. Right? But he never knew they were there. And therefore, as far as he was concerned, she was, you know, she was trying it out. Okay. Matayma Dalila El Shimshon. And then Dalila came to Shimshon and she said, Hine he saltam. You're making fun of me. Matidaber like Zavim. You've lied to me. Atah hagidon oli bameteyos. Now tell me the truth. How can you be overcome? How can you be tied up in a way that will render you helpless? So he told her, all right, you want to know the truth? Yeah, I'll tell you. Really, what I said was true. Just wasn't done right. You used thin ropes. You have to take avoisim. Avoisim are thicker ropes. Ropes that are intertwined. Three ropes are intertwined together. Thicker ropes. But avoisim chadashim, they have to be new thick ropes. Ashaloinasabai malacha, that were never used for anything. Then the chalisi vaisi kachada adam. You do that, then I'll already be like one of the men. Okay. Now it's interesting to note, because we keep seeing here, Shimshon, with all his dealings with the Plishtim, is always, I don't know completely what the significance of this is, but he's always giving hints as to what's actually going on. So here also the Mefarshim say that he wasn't lying to her. He wasn't lying to her. Note the wording, we're going to see soon. There's a change in wording when he actually tells her the truth. He keeps telling her, if you do this, Vayisi ka'achad ha'adam. Later, when he tells her the truth, he says, Vayisi kechol adam. When he tells her the truth, he says, I'll be like all men. Here, as long as he's telling her stories, he keeps saying, I'll be like one of the men. Vayisi ka'achad ha'adam. So, the Mefarshim say, no, he actually intended to tell her, no, by doing this, you're not really going to weaken me. I'm going to be ke'achad ha'adam. Like a most unique man among men. So it's from the same Lashon as what Yaakov described, used when describing the phenomenon of Shimshon. Remember, Yaakov said, he said that the whole Yaakov's whole prophecy about Dan was actually referring to Shimshon. This is the same wording there. Dan yodin amoy ke'achad shitei Yisrael. Like the most unique. Dan will judge his people, Shimshon. Ke'achad. Like the one, like the most unique of the Shvatim of Yisrael. Shimshon is using that same lotion. You tie me up with ropes. Then I'll be like one of the men. Ke'achad. Like that same Ke'achad that Yaakov was talking about. The whole time he's still somehow remaining in the realm of what's really going on, even when he's talking to them. But whatever it is, Batikach Delila Avoisim Chadoshim. So now Delilah took new ropes, thick ropes, and she tied him up in them. And she told him, the Plishtim are upon you, Shimshon. Once again, the ambush was lying in wait in the next room. And he snapped them off his arm like a rope. Like a thread. Now, a thread doesn't... Any of us can snap a thread, right? But it takes minimal effort. So he snapped this like a thread. Let's note, this is already different than the previous ones. The previous ones melted off his arm. These ones he snapped like a thread. Meaning he exerted minimal effort, but he exerted effort. Now, why is that? It's because they were a higher quality rope? If seven new ropes, even if they're not the thickest rope, would just melt, there's no reason why thicker ropes shouldn't just melt. Here already, he exerted a little bit of effort. So Moshe David Vali says, other Mefarshim say this too, the Malbim alludes to this, so there's a certain warning to Shimshon here, this is not going in a good direction. He should note that this second time was a little bit of a step down from what happened the first time. A little bit of a step down. Because really, what was going on here? He was involved in a relationship with this woman, and as we said before, he was actually taken in by her. He was actually taken in by her. And we said earlier that everything that he did, all of his performance in Plishti territory, was with the mindset of a Kohen Gadol in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Once he was with Delilah, this started changing a little bit, because she did have a hold on him. As soon as he understood that she was really the right woman for him, the approach changed. He was really trying to please her. He was acting out of his love for her. He was enjoying the relationship. He's already not on that same level of absolute, pure, just, in the realm of Kedusha and the Kodesh HaKadoshim. He's already involved with an enjoyable relationship with a woman. And just as we see here, that she's getting him one step closer and one step closer, this is actually what's going on the spiritual level too. It was very, very subtle, and Shimshon was still Shimshon. But he was already involved with a Plishti woman, and involved in a personal way. It wasn't like the other times, and it was just a show and a manipulation. He's really being taken in by her. And it's like we said, Dil Dila Oisa. She was already starting to bring him down.
Did he fail to pick up on it, or did he had some disposition?
At this point, he seems to be failing to pick up on it. And we'll see soon when it really hits him. Let's see. Vatayma Delilah El Shimshon. So this is the second time that he simply made a joke out of her. Now while towards her he's making a joke out of her, he apparently is not picking up on the signs that there are warning signs here. Now Delilah says to Shimshon, Ad heina hisaltavi. Until this point you've been making fun of me. Vatedaber elai kzavim. You keep telling me lies. Hagid ali bamete aser. Tell me, how can you be captured? Vatayimel. Sorry. So he tells her, "In ta'agi es sheva machlefo isroishi ima masochis. If you tie the seven locks of my hair to a weaving loom." Okay. Now, note already that here we're starting to see the resolve is weakening. Where do we see this? This seems to be another joke. Because we'll see what happens in a minute when she ties his, when she weaves his hair into the loom. But here also the Mefarshim notes, he's supposed to be picking up on divine warnings that the situation is deteriorating. Because here already, even though he's still pulling her leg, it's getting closer. He doesn't even notice it, but he's getting closer to the truth. But he was supposed to pick up from what he was saying, meaning the Mefarshim say that this was already a little bit of the punishment was already starting to begin. He's slowly moving closer to telling her the truth, because he's already up to his hair. Right, the hair is where the secret lies. What's that? Let's see. As we'll move on, we'll put the bigger picture into perspective. In a general way, what we'll say right now is that he's getting deeper and deeper involved with her, and he's not realizing that she's starting to pull him down. But let's see as we move on.
She's the guy, she's Jewish, she's his wife. Why shouldn't he tell her?
Is every Jew and every wife the right person to be married to?
I imagine that he...
There's a question of ideal. The Geiris was good. Is every Geiris a good idea to be married to? 1 minute. Do you check up a woman before you get married? Right? You have a Ruth. Right? You have a Ruth and you have a Rachel. But history has had its fair share of not such great women. It's important to know who you're dealing with. You have to be careful.
Even not Jews.
What's that? Right? Right? True Jews. Right? Those would have to come out to Gears. You certainly... Chaim Kanievsky told me when I was in Shidduchim, I wasn't sure, should I go for American, Israeli? He told me, the girl you're meeting has your Shemaim, you can marry. That was basically it. He summed up the Shidduchim in that simplistic line. Many people will say, well, what about personality, this, that? Well, we'll say another thing. Forget all the personality. Is there your Shemaim there? Very, very important to know who you're, in general, you have to know who you're fraternizing with, and certainly when it comes to a wife. And here, the point here is that the truth is, he should have been able to see that this was not good for him. But, this is really the point. This is really the point that brought him down. He should have been able to see that she was not his road to success. Why didn't he see it? Because even though he didn't sense it, it was his love for a woman that led him off. It was the fact that Lemaisa, he liked her. He interpreted that. It was very, very subtle, very hazy. And he was certainly using his head, or as we'll say, Chazal say, his eyes. That's what we'll see soon. He was analyzing things carefully. And he thought he had found a woman who was going to get him to the right places that he needs to get. Like we said before, he thought he had found another Rus. But actually, part of what brought him to that conclusion, a little bit mixed into what brought him to that conclusion, was the fact that Lemaisa he liked her. And that helped him get to that conclusion. And that very subtle element kept manifesting very subtly in their marriage in order to please her. In order to, you know how it works. You're trying to be mekarev of somebody. You might have to lower your standards a little bit in order to teach her and raise her higher. This is something that we can all relate to. Now again, it was very subtle. But this is what was going on. And Shimshon was now being sent these warnings that watch out. Always. As we've seen in previous weeks, and as we'll continue to see. We'll see.
How old were they married when she started to do this?
I don't know. The Mepharshim do say that this was over time. It wasn't like she one day sat down, you know, came in, hey, Shimshon, I need to know. Yeah, this was over time. Until it got more intense, as we'll see soon.
Did they have children?
What's that? Don't know. Not recorded. I don't know.
Money wise, like Shimshon was the most powerful person around. You know, if you go killing, you know, Plishtim like that, you could certainly take their money too. Like, what is the problem? Like, why would the money be such an attractive?
First of all, who said he gave her all that much money? Not every woman whose husband is rich is rich. Right? But second of all, it's not a kasha. She was able, maybe they knew her weak spot, and 1,100 extra silver coins. Call it would help, yeah. Now, Vatit Kabayo said, so she wove his hair into the loom, and she nailed it in. And she said to him, Plishtim Alecha Shimshon. Oh, the Plishtim are attacking Shimshon. He woke up from his sleep. Now what's the point here? The loom was driven into the ground. His hair was knocked into the loom. He couldn't disengage his hair from the loom. But he needed to move quickly. What could he do? A simple eitzah. Easier than just disengaging the hair from the loom. He just lifted the whole loom out of the ground. Right now he's ready to fight the Plishtim. Hold the loom in one hand and he's ready to take them on. Right? Now here let's note. The Metzudas notes. Earlier it didn't say that he was asleep. All of a sudden here he was asleep. Why? This he already wasn't going to let her try. The previous ones, he told her, it's the ropes, here, try it out. Right? But this he wasn't going to let her try because this is already his hair. It's a nazir. Shouldn't even be running a comb through his hair. He wouldn't let her weave his hair into a loom. She was only able to do it when he was asleep. Now, she said to him, here she's really bringing out the big guns. How can you say you love me? Very good. So, yes, the Mepharshim do say that Vayikatz Mishnosai was part of what we're saying before, the messages, the subtle divine messages that are being leveled in. And they say, look, you fell asleep on the job. You have to be woken up this time. Apparently, this was reflecting a very subtle, but in his terms, significant slide downwards. And that's what we're seeing here. The slide downwards in his strength and towards his ultimate destruction is reflecting a very subtle slide downwards on his spiritual level, which is being brought about through his relationship with her. And which he doesn't even notice because, again, he's being blinded by that very subtle element that was almost indiscernible of the fact that he simply liked her. It wasn't just the ideals. So now what happens? So she tells him, okay, right? She turns on the guns. Ech toimar ahavti, how can you say you love me? Velibcha initi, your heart is not with me. Zeh shalosh pa'amim heisaltabi, these last three times, you mocked me. Velahiganto libame koichacho gado, and you haven't told me what makes your strength so great. Vayehi ki heitzikoloi bidvorel, and it was as she kept harassing him with her words, kol hayomim, all the time. Vata'altzehu, and she pressed him very greatly. Vatikzar nafshoi lomus, it reached a situation where he just wanted to die. What's going on here? So first of all, on a simple level, before we start even getting into Chazal's drash, you see the extent how Shimshon allowed himself to get really so enamored with her. Again, initially through the understanding that this is by means of Ribui Kvod Shamayim and of bringing her tachas kanfei Hashchina and achieving very great things with her. But Lemaisa, as things developed, she had such a hold on him that she was able to drive him to this feeling of he'd rather die. You have to note that there was a big difference between this and what we see going on with the in the previous instances. Lemaisa, she ensnared him. She ensnared him, and once she started pulling him down, she pulled all the way. Here I'm just talking about pulling down spiritually. I don't think she pulled him down all the way. It was subtle. But just in the level of his being in control of the situation, right? His power of Shimshon. But Chazal say that there was more going on here. Chazal say that she made their relationship difficult on the intimate level, in a way that, without getting into too many details, in a way that, as much as he was with her, he wouldn't actually be able to have children from her. Okay? So now, and here is where we reach the most critical point of where Shimshon drops. See, let's remember. And here's like we said before, where it really hit him, that things have gone awry. Let's remember, what did we say before? Shimshon took on a very dangerous idea in this business of getting involved with Plishti women for the purpose of, like we said, to achieve very great things, to bring out holy neshamas from Klal Yisrael. But once she's not enabling him to actually have children, what is going on? He's fallen into a relationship with a Plishti woman. He's not achieving his means. As soon as he's not achieving his plan, he's in the lowest of places. The whole justification for the plan was the great things he's achieving, and he's doing it as a Kohen Gadol and the Kodesh HaKadoshim. All of a sudden it hit him here that this is not what's going on. He's trapped in a relationship with a foreign, strange woman, and it was just a failure, the whole thing. Instead of achieving the greatest of things, it's just a virus going on. So he despaired. He said, oh, what's the use? This is a very, very chush of a trick of the Yetzer Hara. All of a sudden a person realizes that he isn't where he ought to be. He just let go. He says, yes, what do we bring home from this? He said, just let's go, because just everything's lousy. That's where it's a real challenge, to be able in such a situation to hold on and give yourself that real push. But what happens here? Vayagid lo eskol liboy. Now he really spoke to her from his heart. Vayomer lo. He told her, Moira loy olo al roishi. A razor has never come upon my head. Ki nezir Elohim ani mi beten imi. Because I am a nazir of Hashem from the stomach of my mother. Im gulachti, if I were to be shaven, v'sar mimeni koichi, I'll lose my strength, v'cholisi, I'll be weakened, v'hoyisi kechol ha'adam, I'll be like all men, be like anybody else. Here it's already different, right? Before he was saying like one of the men. He spoke his heart. Vatera Delilah ki higidla es kaliba. And now Delilah saw that he had really spoken his heart. She was able to tell. How was she able to tell? We'll see. Vatishlach vatikrol esani plishtim. She quickly sent for the officers of the plishtim, leimor, telling them, Alua pam, come back. See, after the first couple of times, they stopped coming. Right? So, okay, he's on to the trick. Now she said, no, now it's for real. Come back. Ki higidli es kol libor. Because he has really revealed his heart to me. And the Sarnei Plishtim came to her with the money in their hand, right? That was before there's any talking. Let's see the 1100 on the table. Okay.
How did she know this time that it was?
Oh, so how did she know? So it says, the Pasuk says, Vatera, she saw that he had really spoken his heart. How did she see? So if we're going with the Pashta Pshat, and this is what Rashi, most of the Mepharshim say, Pashta Pshat is that she saw him speaking already from a different place. Before he was speaking as the competent Shimshon, right? You want to know what it is? Listen, I'll tell you, right? And, okay, she was able to see that he was mocking her. Now, he was already speaking from a different place. She had beaten him. He was speaking as a beaten man. And she was able to see that this time, there's no chachma there, there's no shrewdness there. He was really speaking from his heart. The Chazal says something more profound. Nizir Elohim. He said, I am a Nazir of Elohim. He used the name of Hashem. In those days, they actually said the name of Hashem. She knew Shimshon. Again, we're getting an idea of the standards he lived with when he was living in a Plishti town with a Plishti woman. Right? She knew Shimshon. She knew the reverence that he held Hashem's name with. He would never say Hashem's name in vain. And therefore, if he actually said Hashem's name, this was a sign of his absolute sincerity.
Why does it matter that the Plishtim brought the money and gave it to him? What is that so significant about that?
What's that?
Why does it have to mention that the Plishtim came and gave it to
him? I don't know. I don't know if there's a special significance to this. I don't know.
He was different than everybody else because he had long hair and then he was an Ezra. Wouldn't that give her like a little clue? Like, without asking? Like most people might look at him and say, okay, what's different about him than all other people? He has really long hair.
Why didn't she make the connection?
Why didn't anybody make the connection before?
Okay.
Like they were like trying to find out this way, that way.
So you have to understand that in general, long hair was just one of many unusual things about it. Many unusual practices about it. Right? She could have attributed, if she would try to figure it out, this was a man, she grew up with Plishti brothers and a Plishti father. Everything about him was different than anything she had ever known. Right? So 1 minute. So everything about him, she's going to start trying to attribute it to some peculiarity. She could have picked on 1,000 things. Now besides that, like you're saying, there were Nazirim around. Not every Nazir was like this either. Right? And besides that, long hair also wasn't necessarily such an unusual phenomenon in those times. It was a manly thing. So
why should his strength be in his hair? Who told him his strength was in his hair? All we know is that Midepam, Hashem would imbue him with tremendous strength. He would kill a lion. He would kill the leash. Otherwise, he would be like a normal person.
Well, he knew that the strength was in his hair because in the first place, when his mother was first told that she would conceive him, basically they were told he's going to live in a different realm and physically he's going to be in a different realm, meaning he operated on a divine level in the physical way, right? He operated on a whole different level than everybody else. He was a supernatural person in the physical level, and that was directly connected to the fact that he was living a supernatural existence on the spiritual level, which was mainly contained in the fact that he was a Nazir. Nazir was representative of living a life detached from Gashmias, above everybody else.
So he could have told her, if I drink a glass of wine, I'll lose my strength.
Right, Nachman, could be that also would have done, perhaps. So now, Vatiyashneu al Birkeh, so she caused him to fall asleep on her lap. Vatikrala ish, and she called to the man. She called a barber. She had a barber waiting outside. Vatigalach es sheva machlufos roshe, and she shaved off his 7 locks of hair. Vayosar koichoy me'olov, Vatochela anoisoi, and thereby she already began weakening him. Vayosa kurcha meyalov, and his strength left him. What's that? So either she had a barber cut his hair, or she had a man waiting outside with the shaving equipment and she cut it. Not so different mafarshim say different things. Vatayma, and then she said, Plishtim alecho Shimshon. The Plishtim are attacking Shimshon. Vayikatz mishnoso. He awoke from his sleep. Vayayma. And he said, Eitzei kipam bifam. Ve'enoer. I'm going to go out like time by time. Now he felt weak. But he said, I just woke up. It makes sense. Inoer. I'll shake myself off and I'll go out like ever before. And I'll fight them. Ve'ulo yoda ki Hashem sar me'olav. He did not know that Hashem had departed from him. Now this is something of a riddle. He knew that his hair wasn't there. He had just told her that if his hair goes away, he loses his strength. What is he thinking now? So the truth is, huh? What's that? He felt that he was weakened. And I would imagine that a person who has, if it's me or you, maybe. But when you're talking about a person who has hair that's been growing his whole life, presumably he felt it. So the Mefarshim asks this question. And basically the answer given is as follows. The Radak says this. The Radak says he realized he had lost his hair. But he still thought Hashem was with him. And this is a very, very important point. We're already past time, but I'll just finish this point. We'll continue on it next week. We'll elaborate next week. As has already been pointing it out here, the Nezirus was really representative of a whole different level of life, of living on a higher sphere. Nezirus wasn't the segula. It wasn't like there's some charm, you know, with the hair. He has the strength, without the hair he doesn't. He understood that the Nezirus, the point of the Nezirus was to hold him up to a whole higher level of existence. And everything that happened with him, he didn't attribute to his hair. He attributed, as we kept seeing, Hashem operating through him. So he thought to himself, okay, my wife shaved off my head. But it's Hashem doing it, it's not the hair. The Nezirus, sure, that's representative of my whole level of living. But Hashem would still be with me. He went out just as confident in Hashem's presence. And this is where he was wrong. That's why it says he didn't realize that Hashem had departed from him. He knew he had lost his head. But he thought that Hashem was still there. Here, the truth is that here's the point. He hadn't realized that actually that great level that should have provided him with that protection had been slacking. It had been sliding. Or maybe he did realize. He didn't think that such a subtle slide, and it was subtle, should cause that Hashem would completely just let him be captured by the plishtim. Right? That's where he didn't realize that, no, the level wasn't there, and it was the other way around. It was the other way around. His level, without realizing it, just a second, had dropped a couple of notches and did not warrant that supernatural assistance. It was only because he still had the hair that Lamaisa, the schus of the hair, held him up. But the rest of the schus weren't there. Now that he lost his hair, he lost that more. What's that? Because at the end of the day, the Nezirus was a schus. At the end of the Nezirus was a schus, Nezer li kim al roishay, and that we already might call the other way around. Even though at this point, he mainly attributed his success to the whole package of the spiritual level. Well, at this point, really, it was in to an extent the segula, the specific schus of the hair, which at the end of the day still did put him in a different category than anybody else. But Lamaisa, here's where he was wrong. And this is where he fell. But we're going to wait with this for next week. Thank you.